Well, nice to hear the perspective of Steve Sachs on this rivalry. And now we've got more coming up, Logan Webb and Julio Urias. So that is the matchup today, and it's going to be some game. Giants-Dodgers, you never shut it off. You never leave. You go down to that last pitch, and that is the way it's been for years and years and years. And we saw it last night. The Giants have optioned Jason Vosler and Nick Tropiano to AAA. And that has made room for Wilmer Flores, who's back and in the lineup today at first base, and Logan Webb, who will be the pitcher today. So Slater, Posey, Yastrzemski, Longoria, Flores, Solano, Crawford, Dubon in center, and Logan Webb. Pleasure to bring in Phil Rogers, a longtime baseball writer, sort of an expert in the area of Chicago baseball, now working for Forbes, and we catch him there all the time. Phil Rogers, nice to have you with us. Chicago baseball is happening again.
Yeah, it definitely is. As the Cubs mysteriously opted to go into Wayne and kind of break up a team that was seemed to have a lot more potential to do things than it did. The 2016 World Series was great, but I thought they would be better long term than it has turned out they are. But as they take a step back, the White Sox find themselves potentially with the best pitching staff in the American League and a really dynamic lineup. So I think, good things ahead for the White Sox, not just this year, but the next few years.
Well, you know, Phil Rogers with us. You know, I look at the Cubs and I think about the Giants a little bit, because everyone really wrote the Cubs off that Bryant was going to go and Contreras could go and everything else. And before you know it, the Cubs are 17-7 in May. They're in a tight game today in the middle of the sixth inning, 2-2 with the Reds. And that was Castillo for the Reds and Davies for the Cubs. But the Cubs are back in it, so to speak. And, you know, if you're out on the West Coast, you're thinking three teams out of the West. But my eye has been caught by the Cubs. What have the Cubs done to get back into this thing in such a prominent way?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think you mentioned Chris Bryant. That's probably the biggest thing is he is, after a couple of down years, he's really back to being the guy that he had been in the past. I would say that's probably, the one thing that's really positive that's happened for him. They finally have a young homegrown pitcher who's pitching well for them, in Adbert Alzolay. But aside from them, I'm kind of scratching my head. And I think for most Cub fans, I think the narrative around the Cubs is driven by the fact that they've not done anything to retain their core guys from the team that won the 2016 World Series. That, you know, for two years or longer, fans and media have been tracking that this was going to be the year that Anthony Rizzo, Chris Bryant, Javi Baez all reach free agency. And I think for a lot of people, it was a given that they'll sign this guy, they'll sign that guy. And now it doesn't ever seem to be any real urgency from the ownership group and from the front office to get it done. The numbers that I've heard on Anthony Rizzo, for instance, are, I would say, laughable when you consider the impact the guy's had. And so I think even though in the short term, they have played good baseball, this just feels like a transition year. And, maybe all of a sudden they'll come out of the blue with some contract extensions. But from all the talk, that doesn't seem to be the case. And it befuddles their fans who've seen all this building at Wrigley Field, who have seen, the Cubs build themselves up under the Ricketts regime to being, restored as one of the real flagship organizations of baseball. And now they seem to be, a real can't do type of an organization. It's baffling. And maybe Theo Epstein was going to walk away anyway. I mean, he talks about, every 10 years you should have change. And so he left the Red Sox after 9. He left the Cubs after 9. But letting Theo leave, letting Joe Maddon leave, I think those were real negatives. And you know, the common denominator is the ownership group spends less money on the replacements than they do on the guys that helped them break the curse in 2016.
Well, the starting rotation has been stronger than expected. Zach Davies and Hendricks, Arrieta, Trevor Williams from the Pirates, and Azale, who you described. And the bullpen has gone fairly well, too, for the Cubs. But I guess the question is, do they have the staying power, in your opinion, to stay in this thing? Are they solid enough? And, of course, led by Javier Baez. We'll talk about him in a second. But do they have that staying power in the pitching side?
Well, they don't have a lot of depth. And, you know, I thought going into the year, the bullpen in front of Craig Kimbrel was going to be a real weak point. I am not surprised Kimbrel's having a good year. I mean, this is a guy that, in my mind, has a good case to be a Hall of Fame closer when his career is over. The Cubs haven't really gotten him at the right time, and he had the shortened season when he signed late, and then he came back and, like everybody else, was impacted by the COVID season last year. So to get back, have a full spring training and a full year, I think he's getting back to being the Craig Kimbrel he's been throughout his career. My favorite fact in baseball right now, and it has been for a couple of years, as everybody beats up Craig Kimbrel, the guy has more career saves than career hits allowed. I mean, just think about that, Marty. Do nothing other than think about he gets a save more often than he gives up a hit. It's, you know, he does walk a lot of guys, so it's a little bit misleading, but man, that speaks to the stuff he has, and I'm a big Kimbrel fan. But I think it's a pretty thin bullpen. The rotation seems pretty thin to me, unless they have some more good surprises within their system. Guys, you know, Azale had been up each of the last couple of years. He wasn't a brand new guy, and sometimes it takes a while for things to kick in. It's really kicked in. I like Zach Davies' addition in the Darvish trade. You know, he's a little bit like having a second Kyle Hendricks. If you could clone Kyle Hendricks, not a bad idea. And they kind of did that by trading for Davies. He didn't get off to a great start, but he sure seems to have hit a stride now.
Well, we got four games with the Cubs in San Francisco next weekend. So I'm glad to have Phil Rogers on with us, writes for Forbes. But Phil's been covering Chicago baseball for years and years, so I'm glad to have you with us. Kimbrel, I guess, had meltdowns in the national level, and that's probably why we have a little bit of trepidation with him. But that's a very good stat that you came up with. Let's flip it over to the White Sox. Well, before we do that, how about Javier Baez and the magical run that he had this week? And fans, if you didn't see it, just go on YouTube and type in Javier Baez and Will Craig, Pittsburgh Pirates. Phil, maybe you could talk about it a little bit. It was one of the more exciting plays and kind of showed how Baez can influence a game, and he's going to be a free agent.
Yeah, no question on that play. Clearly, the Pittsburgh Pirates lost track of the fact there were two outs, and nothing that Baez did should have mattered. But it goes to show what an unconventional player he is, and his instincts certainly, you know, aren't traditional. I mean, you know, and he's shown it for years. He was, I don't know if he invented the swim move slide into second base, but you know, he pretty much perfected it, that, you know, he could be out by a ton and find a way to slide around the tag. And meanwhile, having the quickest tag in baseball, you know, he's always done those little things really well. Unfortunately, you know, he's failed to correct the biggest hole in his game, which is that, you know, he doesn't have good strike zone judgment, and he wants to swing for the fences all the time. He doesn't have a two-strike swing. And I think if you just look at his offensive numbers across the board, his hitting numbers, you know, when you would think they would have been getting better, they've kind of regressed. And that may be why the front office hasn't committed a crazy big contract to him. I mean, there's a time he would be thinking about one of those deals like Lindor got from the Mets. You know, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think they ever got close with a contract extension. But probably a lesson he could teach us is just take a step back and watch him and watch the game on the field and don't worry about anything that people like me say, because he can be fun to watch, but he's as maddening, when you watch him on a regular basis as he is, crazy exhilarating. But who else, Marty, when they're about to be tagged out from first, would turn and get in a rundown between first base and the plate? I honestly thought, and I know I've heard this a million times, that when a runner starts running back to the plate, he's out. I literally thought there was a rule that, the batter could not, reverse like that between home and first. And clearly that wasn't the case. But, yeah, that's a once-in-a-lifetime play. I was happy to see the Pirate first baseman, Will Craig, was able to kind of take a laugh at himself on that, because, what a boneheaded, that could have been Merkel's boner right there.
Really? It could be one game. Who knows? But Baez, I think, 6 walks, 60 strikeouts, and he killed the Giants in 2016. He got a big hit in that ninth inning rally. So we'll see what happens with him. But, all right, there's a good report on the Cubs. The main guys are kind of lifting him right now, and the bullpen pitching may be a little bit ahead of themselves. But time to watch the Cubs to see them come in next weekend. Phil Rogers with us. Phil, what about Tony La Russa and the White Sox? Tony's always in the news. It seems like he's in the news every week, and not in a very positive way.
Yeah, no question. And I think it's a shame. I don't buy it. I think there's ageism in the criticism of him. I think most of the people that are the hardest on him are 30 or 40 years younger than him, and somehow missed the fact that they see him as an opponent of analytics, when in fact, he created a lot of the bullpen use, a lot of the platoon split advantages, or certainly took it from guys like Gil Hodges and Earl Weaver, managers who had done a lot of that before. Tony in that period of time in the 80s and the 90s, he kind of advanced the art of managing. He managed in what would now be a modern way 30 or 40 years ago, and he gets no credit for that. And, he also gets no credit for having a team that's mostly been in first place this season. Clearly when John Reinsdorf hired 76-year-old Tony La Russa to be his manager, he's doing it because he thinks Tony can win in October, can get a team ready in September, and then win in October. He's done it with 3 different franchises already. That you want to be drawing judgments on Tony La Russa in April and May, to me, is pretty silly. I was not necessarily the biggest Rick Renteria fan. I thought if they could have hired A.J. Hinch, maybe. And you do hear that Rick Hahn, their general manager, was an A.J. Hinch supporter. So I think probably the owner overrode his own front office, but that's his right to do it. And, I think I was surprised Tony still wanted to manage, but I have never had any doubts that he was still very capable of managing. And, it's been interesting. I do think, people from outside the clubhouse have kind of created a narrative about, can he manage Tim Anderson, a young player from a different background, a charismatic, flamboyant type player. But I think Tony has fit in better than most people would think. I think he's doing a good job. And, I think the White Sox, are really set to have a nice season. I mean, yes, he's extended some pitchers to more than 100 pitches in a game, but that's not a crime. And these are guys that for their careers have been pretty durable pitchers. Lance Lynn might be the biggest bulldog going in baseball now. I think I've watched the White Sox this year a lot more than I have the Cubs. I think they are a fun team to watch, and they're young talent. And it's not just the bigger names, but Nick Madrigal from Oregon State, is a guy that puts the ball in play all the time. He's kind of an old school player who complements the rest of the lineup, high batting average hitter. Andrew Vaughn from Cal Berkeley is going to be, he's going to be have a very long, solid major league career. I'm not sure if he'll be an MVP level guy, but, he's a guy that basically arrived from Cal ready to hit in the big leagues, and he's showing that in the chances that he gets. So they are a fun team to watch.
Boy, great report. Well, it's a two-team city, Chicago. Like the Bay Area, they got two good teams here, two good teams there. Who knows, the Mets and the Yankees. Angels not holding up their end of the bargain, but Chicago baseball has come back this year, and we get to see them next week here at Oracle Park. Phil, always a pleasure to have you on, really. Always a pleasure. You always have such good insight, and we'll catch up with you as the season goes on.
Thanks a lot, Marty. That was fun.
Yeah, anytime. Phil Rogers, you can catch him at Forbes as he covers some baseball for them. Well, Stephen Treader joins us. Remember last week I had 40 years, a Giant, the life of Horace Stoneham and the Stoneham family that owned the Giants from 1918 through 1976. And it's an amazing story. You don't have the Giants of 2021 without the Stoneham family. And not much at the ballpark sort of commemorating them. But Horace Stoneham was a pioneer in so many ways, a very interesting man. Stephen Treader wrote the book, so this will be part two of my interview with him. I think you're really going to enjoy it and learn a lot about the Stoneham family. As I said, we don't have Giants baseball without the Stoneham. So we'll take a break, come back with Stephen Treader right after this.